Well, as Mr. Zollner already brought out today, the theme of this year's Sabbath school classes was obedience to God. And there was a lot of focus on the righteous men in the Old Testament, how they obeyed and trusted God. Well, let's notice something here in Matthew 13 that Jesus Christ told his disciples. Matthew 13 and in verse 10. Matthew 13 and in verse 10. And the disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" And he answered and said to them, "Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given." So he was telling his disciples that they had the opportunity to learn all there was to know about the coming kingdom of God. It was a tremendous blessing that Jesus Christ gave the disciples. Their minds were opened to that understanding. But notice verse 16. Verse 16. "Blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear." So again, he was talking to his disciples that they were blessed because they could see these things and they could understand. "Assuredly, I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it." So here you have Matthew 13, verse 17, telling us that there were many prophets and righteous men who desired to see the things that the disciples were able to see and understand. They didn't at that time. They may have seen a glimpse of certain things, but not all that was revealed there by Jesus Christ. Now, here's something also to consider. Now, in Matthew's account, it says that the prophets and the righteous men desired to see this. Now, in the account in Luke, Luke brings out that kings desired to see these things as well. So you had prophets, righteous men, and kings of the past desired to see what the disciples saw. Now, we often read in the Bible about the righteous prophets and the righteous kings. And as the Sabbath School program brought out this year, there were a number of Old Testament personages that were gone over and discussed. And we do know that a number of them did obey God, as was brought out in the program this year. But it's also interesting to see this phrase, righteous men. Righteous men desired to see what the disciples saw and heard. You know, there were many righteous men that lived, not just the ones we know about, of Noah and of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, Joseph. Those are very familiar. We don't often think about others that were righteous, and yet the Bible mentions them, especially those who lived prior to Noah, prior to the flood. And yet they knew a lot, not everything that we know today. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look at four of the men who lived before Noah, and they were righteous. And we're going to learn some lessons about their lives. And so the title of the sermon today is Lessons from Early Righteous Men. Lessons from Early Righteous Men. Now, the Bible only gives us some brief hints as to some of these men, but what we see in the scriptures is quite intriguing. The first one, and of course the Sabbath School children went through this man's life, but let's look at it a little bit more detail about the life of Abel. Now, while we're here in Matthew, let's look at Matthew 23. Matthew 23 and verse 34. Matthew 23, verse 34. Therefore, indeed, I send you prophets, wise men, and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute you from city to city, that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. And so here was another fellow that was murdered for the sake of obeying God, but he went right from the beginning from Abel. And notice the description of Abel, the character of Abel that Jesus Christ said. He was righteous. Jesus called him a righteous man. Now what does this mean? We know that Abel lived long before Moses ever came on the scene, long before the Ten Commandments were given at Mount Sinai, and yet Abel's called righteous. The word in the Greek for righteous means just, without prejudice, without partiality. The word in the Greek designates or denotes that being in a state of right conduct. For Abel to be in a state of right conduct, a state of righteousness, was unique if you think about it, because again, this was before Noah, before Moses, before Abraham, Moses, and yet he's called righteous. So Abel had to have known what was right. He had to make the decision to follow the right. In other words, he had to know what God considered to be right and good. He had to know the way of God, the give way, and not the selfish way. Let's look at Hebrews 11 and verse 4. Hebrews 11, verse 4. We know that Hebrews 11 is referring to the faith chapter, and these men were of faith. Hebrews 11, verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and through it, he being dead still speaks. Who is the first man of faith? Abel. Abel was the first man of faith that is listed. And you find that he did a number of things. He gave God an not just a sacrifice, but an excellent sacrifice. And he obtained a witness that he was righteous. And even though he is dead, he still speaks. He still speaks. So let's continue here. That Hebrews 12, verse 22. Hebrews 12, verse 22. You have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven, to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks better things than that of Abel. And so you find in this particular set of scriptures that we see that Abel died. We know that Abel died according to Genesis, but we also see that there's an example of what Abel did was what Jesus did later. And we know that Jesus' blood was much more important of his death. His death was far more important than Abel's. But you see, Abel is connected here with the death of Jesus Christ. So the Bible gives Abel a very high position along with Jesus Christ. And we know that even though Abel is dead, his witness stands by what we read. What we read in Hebrews and what we read back in Genesis. So let's look at that story and let's pick out a few things in Genesis 4, verse 1 and 2. Genesis 4, verse 1 and 2. Genesis 4, verse 1 and 2. Now, Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Abel, and said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. She bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now, Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. It's interesting that Eve explained the name of her firstborn son, Cain. I have acquired. Cain means acquired, kind of get. It's interesting when you look at Cain's life and what he did do. How come Eve didn't say anything about Abel's name? You notice that? I have acquired a man from the Lord. She bore again, this time the brother Abel. And that's it. That's all we have. Now, the way it's written here, and it could be, we don't know for sure, but it could be that Abel was the younger twin because she bore again. That particular phrase can indicate that Abel could have been a twin of Cain. Again, we don't know for sure, but there is that possibility or of a tradition. It's also interesting to note that Abel, as we heard earlier, was righteous and he was a shepherd. Who is the great shepherd? Is Jesus Christ. And it's kind of interesting that Abel is linked with Christ there in Hebrews. And so here Abel is a keeper of sheep. Now, for them to do what they're doing, they're probably more than just tiny little children here. Probably more of an adult age. We don't know. We just have a very basic overview here of Cain and Abel. But Abel's name, when you look at it in the Hebrew, it means breath. Or nothing. Wonder why Abel was named the way he was named. Breath or nothing. I don't know. You know, it's called food for thought. It's something that one could discuss at other times and wonder about. Let's go on. The process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering to the offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Now Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering. He did not respect Cain and his offering, and Cain was very angry. His countenance fell. So now God is not revealing here that animal sacrifices were better than grain sacrifices. We see in Leviticus that God gives equal importance to both the grain offering and to the burnt offerings. But one thing we do see here is that Abel brought of the firstborn. Cain brought of the fruit. It does not say first fruits. which would have been a more excellent offering. Abel gave more than just an animal. He gave of the firstborn. As it says, the firstborn of his flock. And we know that the firstborn prefigured what God would do by giving up his firstborn, Jesus Christ. It's very interesting when you look at Hebrews and you see Abel connected with Jesus Christ, and you see this right here at the beginning of what he did. And he also offered the fat. Now, this isn't discussed until later on in Leviticus, that the fat of the offering was special to God. And when it was burnt, it was there was a sweet incense that arose from it. And God wanted the fat of the offering. But you see this little statement here, the firstborn of the flock and of their fat. And that was just an added thing that Abel did. Well, who taught him that? Could it have been Adam? No one knows. Or could it have been God directly speaking to Abel at times with this? It's very interesting, again, when you look at this background here. He gave them the firstborn and of the fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering. So, Cain got upset. Now, God is very merciful to all peoples, and he gives everybody a chance to repent. And so the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you shall rule over it." So God was warning Cain, you're getting into an angry attitude here. Don't you realize that if you would do well, your sacrifice would be accepted? Cain could have said, what do you want me to do? I do want to do well. What do you want? But you don't find this here. And God warns him that if you're not careful, sin lies at the door. So God basically tells him, repent and change. He didn't listen. He's angry. He's angry that his younger brother's sacrifice was accepted. His solution, in his mind, get rid of Abel. Get rid of Abel. One lesson we see here is that Abel is righteous. And he does everything to honor God. Cain, of course, did not. And one of the lessons is don't allow anger to become so bitter that it rules over us. I guess it was last week we were in the evening. There is a BBC presentation of Charles Dickens' novel, Our Mutual Friend. And it had a few of the series in this episode. But in this adaptation of the book, there is a man that is portrayed as being so bitter at being rejected that he loses all common sense. He doesn't think rationally. And the anger just eats at him. And he does some very horrible things. He even knows that he shouldn't be doing this, but he's so wrapped up with anger that he can't get over it. I don't want to give the story plot away in case you might want to watch that. But you could see visibly, it is amazing to me to see visibly what bitterness can do to a person. It was just phenomenal. Right there on the screen. How bitterness can destroy a person because he was so angry he couldn't control the anger and tried to change things with what was going on, and he couldn't do it. It ruined him. It ruined him. Let's look at verse 8. Verse 8. Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. So Cain was planning this murder. It was premeditated. Somehow he convinced Abel to go into the field. Now remember, Abel is a shepherd. Cain works with the land. What did he do to convince Abel to go into the field? Did it start off with being kind and not knowing that, you know, Cain had this intent of killing him? Again, we're just seeing the surface here. But Cain thought he was alone. Thought he was alone. He was going to get rid of him. And so he rose up and killed him. And so the Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" He said, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" So he lies to God. He thinks that he's all by himself, that God doesn't see, and God knew, of course. And he again was giving Cain an opportunity to say what he did, to confess. Cain showed no remorse. Am I my brother's keeper? Am I supposed to take care of my brother? Well, yes. Yes, Abel would have taken care of you. But you see that he did not even have any sense of remorse. Didn't care. What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now we know that blood doesn't cry out. It's a metaphor of the fact that God knew that his blood was shed and it was on the ground, and Cain tried to do it out in the field where it was away from everyone, away from God. And so God says, "So now you are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand." And God tells him, "You were the one that killed him." So we find that God is telling Cain he should have been careful and taken care of his brother. And God cursed Cain. And just as Cain killed Abel in the field would not produce fruit for him as it once did. You are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your land. And when you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you. So in Cain's thinking, I will get rid of Abel, and in this field where no one knows where he is, God knew. And yet God says, Cain, you should have ruled over your spirit. You should not have allowed sin to destroy you. You should not have allowed bitterness to destroy you. And you thought you were going to get away with it in your field or in the field. Well, guess what? When you start trying to do more work in your field, it's going to be rough, more rough for you than it was before. As it says, it won't yield its strength to you. You're going to till it. It won't yield its strength to you. So that's what happened to him. That's what happened to Cain. Now, let's keep our place here in Genesis 4. Let's look at 1 John 3. 1 John 3, verse 10. 1 John 3 and verse 10. In this, the children of God and the children of the devil are manifest. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is he who does not love his brother. So we're told two things here. We are to practice righteousness in order to be of God and practice righteousness. And that same word there is what was used by Jesus Christ earlier when he said that Abel was righteous. To follow God and be just. If you don't do it, you're not of God. And nor are you of God if you don't love your brother. Abel was righteous. Of course, Cain was not, didn't care for his brother. This is the message you heard from the beginning, that you should love one another. Where is your brother Abel? Cain said, am I my brother's keeper? From the very beginning, we understand that we are to love one another, not as Cain. So it goes right, this whole section here goes right back to Cain and Abel, who was of the wicked one. So he yielded to Satan's influences, murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brother's were righteous. So another indication here in the Bible that Abel was righteous. Do not marvel, my brethren, if the world hates you. And that's the lesson we learn from here. The world does not support the righteous. A righteous person has to continue to do what they're doing, whether anyone does that or not, the righteousness. Of course, Cain did not do the righteous things that Abel had done. So don't be surprised if the world turns against the righteous. The world at that time included Cain, who went against Abel. And just because Abel gave the right type of sacrifice, an offering that was pleasing to God, he was killed over that. So what we have to recognize is that even though you have the two men, one doing one thing and one doing the other, you see who God commended, and that was Abel. Of course, Abel died. But Abel is also the first one who is listed as a man of faith. Now, let's go back to Genesis 4. Genesis 4, story goes on to talk about Cain was banished. He was removed from the other children of Adam and Eve. Now we come to the second righteous man that we're going to look at, and his name is Seth. Chapter 4, verse 25. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and named him Seth. For God has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel, whom Cain killed. So she recognized that, yes, Cain killed Abel, and now we have a man by the name of Seth. Now, again, we saw earlier that Eve did not give a description of Abel's name, but now she describes Seth as appointed. Meaning appointed. God has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel. Another meaning of Seth means to put or to be put in place of. It can also mean a seedling, kind of a start of a new line. And now that Abel was dead, you have a start of a new line. So you also see that God has appointed another seed for me. So here's a recognition that God would be involved in Seth's life. Now notice what Adam says about him over here in chapter 5, verse 3. Adam lived 130 years and begat a son in his own likeness after his image and named him Seth. So Seth was a son in his own image or likeness. As Adam was in the likeness of God, in the image of God. In this case, it could mean that Seth must have really looked a lot like Adam for that statement to be made in his likeness after his image, named him Seth. Now, this was not said about Cain and Abel. Again, the Bible just very briefly discusses certain events here. And Cain and Abel are omitted from this genealogy. Notice this is the verse 1. This is the book of the genealogy of Adam. Adam. Seth. Well, we know that Abel was dead at this time. Cain was banished and removed. So this genealogy here begins with Adam and then to Seth. Sons of God. Adam was a son of God. Seth, in the image of Adam, was like a son of God. Now, we don't find much in the Bible about Seth. I want to read something from Josephus. Of course, he's a Jewish historian. This is what he wrote. Now, a lot of what Josephus writes comes from sometimes oral tradition, sometimes written documents that were known over the centuries. So we don't know where he got this material, but it's very interesting to read some of this. Let me read this. He said, "Now this Seth, when he was brought up and came to those years in which he could discern what was good, became a virtuous man, and as he was himself an excellent character, so did he leave children behind him who imitated his virtues." Again, we don't know where he got this information, but here you have the line of Seth. It begins with Seth, and we'll see how this line plays out. That this line of people who came after him were righteous people. The line of Seth versus the line of Cain. All these proved to be of good dispositions. They were also the inventors of that particular sort of wisdom which is concerned with the heavenly bodies and their order. Astronomy. Now, there is some tradition among the Jews that the beginnings of the understanding of the calculation of the calendar go all the way back to Seth. And one wonders what God revealed to Seth. So here we see, based on this description, another in place of Abel, one who was obedient to God. Now, Josephus continues, he says, "This posterity of Seth continued to esteem God as the Lord of the universe, and to have an entire regard to virtue for seven generations." And as you see in the Bible, these men came all the way up to Noah, who was what? A preacher of righteousness. Noah's of the line of Seth. Now, let's look at what the Bible says about his firstborn son, Enosh. And this is the third one we will look at. Enosh, chapter 5, verse 6. Chapter 5, verse 6. "Seth lived 105 years and begot Enosh. After he begot Enosh, Seth lived 807 years, and he had sons and daughters. And then, of course, he died." Now, notice verse 9. "Enosh lived 90 years and begot Cainan. After he begat Cainan, Enosh lived 815 years. He had sons and daughters. And all the days of Enosh were 905 years, and he died." Now again, if that's all we read about Enosh, that seems to be all we have about him. But the Bible also gives One other brief statement about Enosh in Genesis 4, verse 26. And as for Seth, to him also a son was born, and he named him Enosh. Then men began to call on the name of the Lord. So here you have God involved in Seth's life, God involved in the life of Enosh. It was at this time men began to call on the name of the Lord. Now there's been a lot of discussion about what this particular phrase means. It appears that this was the time in which God's words were being preached to offset the words of Cain and his descendants. And it seems that those in the line of Seth, with Enosh here, began to call upon the name of God. I want to read what Benson's commentary says about this. Then began men to be called by the Son, by the name of the Lord. Began to be called by the name of God, or to call themselves by God. Now Cain and those who had deserted religion had built a city and began to declare for irreligion, no religion, and called themselves the sons of men. Those that adhered to God began to declare for God and to his worship and called themselves the sons of God. Now, again, it's kind of interesting when you look later at Genesis 6, that the sons, in verse 2, the sons of God saw the daughters of men and they were beautiful. They took wives for whomever they chose. Somehow, something happened with the line of Seth and the line of Cain, and there was corruption that involved so that everyone was corrupt on the earth. But apparently, from the line of Seth, when Seth was alive, and he taught his son Enosh here about God, that there was this distinct division of the godly versus the irreverent. The godly versus the ones from Cain. But unfortunately, the whole world became so corrupt that God had to destroy all except for Noah, who was of the line of Seth. Now, this particular knowledge of God apparently continued through the time of Enosh's great-great-grandson, Enoch. And that's the fourth one we're going to look at. Enoch also was a righteous person, as we find in Genesis 5, verse 21. Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. Methuselah, after he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years and had sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years, and Enoch walked with God. He was not, for God took him. Now, Enoch means dedicated or initiated. Two times in this very small section here, we find that Enoch walked with God. Now, we have seen all these other men living into their 800s and 900s. Enoch lived 365 years, and he was not, for God took him. What happened? Only 365 years? When everybody else lived a lot longer, 500 more years than he did? What happened? Now, many who read this particular statement here in Genesis 5, then try to correlate it over here with Hebrews 11. Let's look at Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11. And in verse 5. Hebrews 11, verse 5. By faith, Enoch was taken away, so he did not see death. He was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken away, or taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. So people who read this say, okay, so God took him up into heaven. Many people believe that. Elijah and Enoch went up to heaven. Now some also say, well, the apocryphal book of Enoch, because there is in the Apocrypha a book of Enoch. They say, well, that was written by Enoch. But that's not true either, because most scholars will say the apocryphal book of Enoch was written during the intertestament times between the Old and the New Testament, a couple hundred years before Christ came. But the point is, he was taken away so he didn't see death. What does that mean? He was removed. He was taken away. Now, we could discuss some issues here. Was it that he would not have to face death where he was? That's possible. Was it that he would have been martyred in a very gruesome way, and God took him away from that situation so that he could die elsewhere? The Greek word for taken, or translated as it is in some versions, means to basically transfer or to convey to another place, to take to another place. So God removed Enoch from where he was living to another place, which would have had to have been on the earth. Men, though, could not find Enoch anywhere. They couldn't find his body. He was not found. Just like when God buried Moses. And remember, Satan wanted Moses' body. And there's a big conflict over that, but no one knows where Moses is buried. But Moses is dead. We know that. He's buried. He was taken away somewhere unknown but by God. He was not is an indication that he died. Now, in Genesis, we saw that his days were 365 years. In Hebrews 11, verse 13, it says, these all died in faith. Enoch died. He is not living up in heaven. He died. But you see that he, before his death, that he had this testimony. He pleased God. He was obedient to God. Now, the story actually doesn't end there. Let me just read one thing that Josephus said before we look at something else. Josephus mentions the following about Elijah and Enoch. He says this, Enoch, who was before the deluge, it is written in the sacred books, of course, Elijah and Enoch disappeared, but that nobody knew that they died. Even Josephus, when he wrote, recognized that they both died somewhere on the earth, somewhere from where they had originally been. But prior to his taking away, Enoch was a prophet. And we have some of Enoch's words in the Bible. Jude 1, verse 11. Jude 1 and verse 11. Woe to them! They have gone in the way of Cain. They have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit and perished in the rebellion of Korah. So here's an example of the men who were disobedient, Cain and Balaam and Korah. And so this is a warning against evil men who went into the way of Cain. Now let's look at verse 14. Now Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied about these men also, about these who were evil, saying, "Behold, the Lord comes with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment on all, to convict all who are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds which they have committed in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which the ungodly sinners have spoken against him." These are the words of Enoch. Now, how did Jude come to find these words? Well, we have to remember that Jude was the half-brother of Jesus Christ. How many things did Jesus Christ instruct his disciples on that we don't know about? Remember, if everything that Jesus said could have been written in books, the world could not contain all the books. Somehow this information was conveyed to Jude. Jude was inspired to write these words from Enoch, who lived before Noah. What is Enoch preaching here? He's preaching against the line of Cain, the evil men of Cain. They've run greedily in the way of Cain. So he's prophesying of the fact that, and you know what, we don't find this statement in Genesis either. This is the only place in the Bible where this statement is found. So Enoch is prophesying what is going to happen to those who are disobedient, to those who follow the way of Cain. We know that this prophecy is referring to the time when the wicked will be destroyed at the return of Jesus Christ. Enoch is prophesying the return of Jesus even before Jesus came and died for humanity. It's all before Noah, all before Moses. One of the most interesting prophecies we have here of the coming kingdom, of the Lord coming with 10,000 of his saints. We would preach on the Feast of Trumpets. Well, they would be coming with the 10,000 of his saints to execute judgment. So he had faith. And he had faith to be conveyed to a different place and yield himself to God. And he died in God's care and in God's keeping. So he was preaching faith, with faith, and he proclaimed the coming kingdom of God and what would happen to the wicked. I don't know, I wonder, you know, one wonders, was this some of what he was saying that got him in trouble? And where God had to take him away because there was so much upset from the line of Cain? One wonders what was going on. Because eventually we find that all peoples from the line of Cain and the line of Seth became so disobedient that God had to destroy all except for Noah. Now there's another thing interesting about this family. They're all from the line of Seth. Noah comes from that same family. We see that the Bible calls Noah a preacher of righteousness. That's in 2 Peter 2, verse 5. But let's look at Luke 3. Luke 3. Verse 23. Luke 3, verse 23. Now Jesus himself began his ministry at about 30 years of age, being as supposed the son of Joseph, the son of Heli. So here now we find the legal lineage of Jesus Christ through Joseph. Notice verse 37. This legal lineage goes back, well, let's start in verse 36. The son of Noah, the son of Lamech, the son of Methuselah, the son of Enoch, son of Jared, son of Mahalalel, son of Cainan, the son of Enosh, son of Seth, son of Adam, the son of God. This legal line goes through the line of Seth, not Cain, not anyone of Cain, is listed here. Abel, of course, had died. And so it was from Seth. And this is all in the legal lineage of Jesus Christ. So even though these men lived lived thousands of years ago, and, you know, close to 5,000-6,000 years ago, and even though the Bible reveals very little about these men, what we do see is what we do read is that they were loyal to God. They obeyed God. They taught the ways of God to their descendants, as we're to do now, as we heard earlier in the sermonette, that we're to teach our children the ways of God. So what can we learn? What's a good takeaway we can take with us from these four righteous men? Well, let's look at a summary as we conclude in Romans 15. Let's look at Romans 15, verse 4. Romans 15, verse 4. For whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we through the patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. So what we read through the Scriptures is to give us hope, comfort, and hope. Now may the God of patience and comfort grant you to be like-minded toward one another, according to Jesus Christ. Like-minded toward one another. Are we not to be our brother's keeper? Absolutely. That you may, with one mind and one mouth, glorify the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. So we can have hope. And these men died. We see that they were righteous. They obeyed even in times of distress. And no matter what happens in our lives, no matter what happens around us, we have to be remaining loyal. We have to be obedient to God. And we have to have hope. Abel had it. Seth had it. Enosh had it. Enoch had it. So we're to have hope and faith that Jesus will return. And we look forward to that time. Those men didn't give up, and neither should we.